We analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Today I've got Monica Schaefer here with me. Hi there, Monica. How are you doing?
Hello, Jan. Nice to hear your voice again and nice to talk to you again. It's been a while since we've spoken, so I'm really looking forward to this interview, this session today.
Yeah, it's been a long time and crazy stuff at our end over here. Chaos for me and just last week we've had Christians wanting to start a race war and kill all the blacks, and now those Christians are all caught and they're on trial. So rather crazy stuff, but people are getting tired of things over here.
Things are heating up very much, and we do hear about the things going on in South Africa, not in the mainstream media, but I have been following a little bit what's going on, and it's, you know, we need to look to South Africa to see what they have in mind for us here in Canada and in the United States and in Europe too, you know, so this is what we have to be watchful of and mindful of. And but of course, the mainstream media does not tell us what's going on in South Africa.
Absolutely. Anything that's important to whites, the mainstream media does not discuss it at all. And people over here are very frustrated as well. They're frustrated that certain information's not getting out and so forth. But yeah, we are the pioneers. We are pioneering your future and trying to see what the hell we can do as well for ourselves and what can be learned from it. So
yes,
it's a useful place to experiment, and we might as well experiment while we can.
That's an interesting terminology, but really it's a fight for our very survival, isn't it, Jan? I mean, this is a existential crisis we're facing here and what we're in. So, and all part of that is this psychological warfare that they've conducted against us. And part of that is the criminalization of people who speak the truth. And I think that's where we were wanting to go today with this. Talking about Alfred and you know, speech crime trials in Germany and that kind of thing.
Yeah, Monica, I think the first thing on the list is your brother, because I've kind of lost touch with where he's at. I think the last time we spoke, we hadn't even spoken about him getting his second sentence. I think that is for, was the second sentence for defending himself in court for the first sentence?
Yes. And this can go round and round like a merry-go-round, because, again, in his recent trial, I'll just tell you the chronology here to bring people up to speed what happened. So basically and briefly, in October of 2018, Alfred was sentenced to 38 months prison time, of which he had already been in jail for a few months by that point, because they picked him up in his home and basically threw him in the gulag just when the trial barely had begun, the speech crime trial of him and myself in 2018. On that day, October 26, 2018, I was released on time served. I had been in jail for 10 months there, and then was released on time served, 10 months, and he received 38 months. Now, the judge had made it perfectly clear during that trial that Alfred was doing new speech crimes, new crimes in court, and several times the judge had stopped Alfred while he was speaking and said, oh, I have to give you a warning here that this is new crime that you're doing, so if you carry on in this direction that you're going, that you know, we'll have to do new charges. And Alfred had basically said, well, you know, it looks like you want to lock me up for 6 million years anyway, and I am speaking the truth and I shall continue. So he did, and he also did that nice straight arm gesture and, you know, lifting his arm high, where he says, look how high my dog Pavlov can jump. You know, with a very
in the courtroom.
Yes, he did that on day one, just when I had entered the courtroom, and there was the courtroom was full of media and cameras at that point. And before the trial began, they left because there aren't any cameras in the trial. But anyway, that was all photographed, and the gasps of astonishment, you know, that happened in Germany when somebody just lifts their arm a certain way. This is a very threatening thing to them, this very threatening gesture for them. And, you know, it, when you think about it, it's just, you're holding your arm in a certain position, and this is so threatening to them that that's also part of the reason that, you know, Alfred has received more jail time. But mainly, you know, it's what he had said in court, explaining how he reached his conclusions, giving evidence, presenting evidence, much of which comes from Jewish sources, by the way. Much of what we know comes from Jewish sources, because they do tell us what they're doing, and they present it to us. It's basically hidden in plain sight, as is everything else, that once you've opened your eyes to the truth, everything is hidden in plain sight. So anyway, on August 8th of this year, 2019, Alfred had his, you know, court, well, the trial, the second trial came to a conclusion on that date, and the judge sentenced him to another 18 months of jail time on top of the 38 that he was served with last October, so another 18 months for the things he said in court. Okay, so because he's saying these things in public, quote unquote in public, and you're not allowed to say these things in public, and we're talking about, you know, speaking of the Holocaust as a big lie, the Jewish Holocaust of World War II, that's the subject here, in case people are not up to speed on what this was all about. That's the main thing. I mean, Alfred made lots of videos about how brainwashing works and how they brought us to this point and this kind of thing. Psychological warfare, that's basically his specialty. But, you know, the hollow hoax, the Holocaust, that's something you're not allowed to question. And it's really a religion, the way it's, you know, it's gone. It's their religion. And if we question their religion, we are a heretic to be burned at the stake, metaphorically speaking. So August 8th, he was sentenced to another 18 months in addition, and then that was under appeal by, not just by Alfred, but by the prosecutor, because the prosecutor had asked for 24 additional months, and 18 months for defending yourself in court simply wasn't enough. And so they appealed, but both sides appealed, and then on November 21st, the appeal process, which took three court days, that ended on November 21st. And, well, guess what? The judge actually lowered that amount of 18 months to 8 months. So
that is good news.
Well, it's good news, although we have to always remember that even one day in jail.
it's not great, but, I mean, it's better.
I agree, Jan. Isn't it funny how they've got us now that we're celebrating when a big sentence has been reduced to a little sentence, but for something that there shouldn't be any sentence at all, of course.
Right? It is ridiculous. Absolutely.
We know that. But yes, of course, that was a good news item. And it does perhaps show us that even in Bavaria, which is the state in Germany that is kind of the most strictest and most uptight about all these things, even there, perhaps the winds are changing. Like, this is a good sign. I would say this is a good sign that the judge actually reduced that 8 months to 8 months. So anyway, the judge said, okay, we want him in jail for 4 years total. Now, my math, it all added up to 46 months, which is...
Yes, I was going to say, because I also didn't see that it's 4 years. It's 3.8 years.
Yeah, but, you know, the judge said 4 years, and then others have said 4 years. I don't know if they somehow snuck another 2 months in there or not, but regardless, it is It's approximately 4 years total jail time simply for
still very long. Still very long.
And simply for speaking. Now, I want to just put it this way. No matter what he was speaking, let's just put aside the fact that we know he was speaking truth and there's all kinds of evidence to back us up in what we're saying, and no evidence on their side. And that's, of course, why they criminalize the evidence. They don't allow evidence. But even if what Alfred was saying was full of holes or just nonsense or, you know, just absolute hocus pocus,
rubbish. Yeah.
To put somebody in jail for speaking, I think that, well, any thinking person would say, gee, there's something wrong with that, really wrong with that. And then when you look into it and the rules they have set up and the, you know, how they actually criminalize the evidence, or they do not allow evidence into the courts. And this began with the Nuremberg trials already back in 1945 to 48. I think that went on for quite some time. Well, you can look this up for yourselves, folks. Don't take my word for it, but look up articles 19 and 21 of the Nuremberg trials. And I'll just summarize or paraphrase. Basically, evidence is not required for something that is self-evident. Okay, so or something is common knowledge, you don't need to prove it. And so,
Wow. Yeah,
the Holocaust is common knowledge. It's self-evident. You don't need evidence. You don't need to prove it. That's how it, you know, how it began back then. They set the bar at that height or at that, you know, depth. And that's how it's been ever since. And now it's actually worse, especially in Germany. But there are many countries who have these Holocaust denial laws. And in some countries, they just call it hate speech laws or whatever. And so to actually point out evidence that is contrary to their story, you are criminalized for doing that, and the evidence is illegal, you know. So that's how that is. So now Alfred, okay, I'll just give another little update about his situation. Up to November 21st, he was in Stadelheim. That is the old prison in Munich. That is also where I was imprisoned, in the women's section there. And on November 21st, that day, he was moved to a different prison, Landsberg am Lech, which is the same prison where a certain great man was also imprisoned and where he wrote a certain bestseller.
Really? Really? Wow. The same prison as Hitler.
Yeah, and where he wrote that bestseller of his.
Now how does that how do things change? Because I actually want to just make a comment here about whites getting locked up for things that they say. Here in South Africa, the blacks went and they criminalized the use of the K word. And I don't know if you know the K word, but it's the South African version of nigger. And they criminalized it. And a white woman, Vicky Momberg, she was sentenced to 2 years jail time for using the K word.
Wow. I think I read that article perhaps on your site or somewhere.
I haven't put it up, but yes, it did the rounds quite a bit. Just for using the K word, just basically calling she basically said, in our version, she just said like nigger, 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 and it was on tape or on video or whatever, and 2 years jail time, 2 years
wow.
jail time. And another example of the kind of craziness of these blacks, which is somewhat similar to the madness of the Jews, is, do you know that in a number of countries in Africa, it's not yet so in South Africa, but in a number of countries in Africa, do you know that if you mock the president, if you mock the president or laugh at the president or anything like that, do you know that they can send you to jail?
Oh my goodness.
Just for joking about the president. That shows you their insecurities. It's a lot like the Jews. You know, just like you mock their stupid Holocaust, which is a lie, and jail time for you. So it's
kind of
similar stupid thinking. I must tell you a bit of a South African joke. And I can't really tell jokes, but I'll give you the gist of it. I saw a joke today that was doing the rounds. It said that in South Africa, if you don't pay your TV license to the government, if you don't pay your annual TV license, you will get fined R1,000. But if you commit a murder, then you can get out on bail for R500. So the advice then was, if an inspector comes to get you to pay your TV license, kill him, and you'll be able to get out of jail for $500. You'll save yourself $500.
My goodness! Yeah, that says it all, doesn't it? It's just ludicrous. It's just everything out of proportion. You know,
yes,
I mean, the TV license is not really related to what we're talking about, speaking truth and getting in trouble for it, but it is demonstrating how out of sync and out of proportion everything has become, how insane everything has
absolutely.
Become.
Absolutely. Absolutely. In South Africa, if you're a serial killer, you can be out of jail within 10 years.
Yeah.
If you're a serial killer, they let murderers go. There's no execution in South Africa. And compare that now to your brother spending 4 years in jail, and your brother didn't hurt anybody. He didn't steal a cent from anybody. He just spoke the truth.
That's right.
He just made it in a supposedly free country.
Yeah, and at the end of each charge, they write the effect of this crime and that crime, okay, so these speech crimes, that is to incite the people to you know, incite hate in the people towards, well, I guess towards the Jews in this case. I don't remember if it outlines that in that paragraph, but and then it also says it causes an undermining of the general trust in the justice system, like that each of these charges causes the general public to distrust the justice system. And meanwhile, to make this comparison you made, you know, in South Africa with, you know, not paying your TV license and how out of proportion that is with the penalties or the fines then to get out on bail for murder. Well, in Germany, similar things happening, like some of these new invaders, I'll call them. They call them the migrants or the refugees. They're called refugees, and they're actually, if it's proven that they've done some crimes, like serious crimes, like rapes or that kind of thing, that then the judge will say, well, you know, we can't really do anything about it because they're a refugee. Like, they've got certain protections as refugees.
Refugee rights.
Yeah.
Like they got more rights than a citizen. Unreal.
In some ways they do, you know, because, well, and it's all very political, right? They are wanting to, the certain group of people that we must not name lest we be called anti-Semitic, they want to destroy Germany. The war is still on in Germany, you know, it never ended in 1945. And only the bombs stopped dropping, but now it's, the war continued in other ways, and I would say in more lethal ways, because with the psychological warfare, we've got entire generations of people in Germany who are going along with all this stuff that's going on and saying, oh, well, you know, now Germany is good again. You know, Germany was bad. We did the Holocaust. And now Germany is good because we're bringing in all these poor people. And aren't we good now? And then Alfred and I come along and we're making Germany bad again. So we have to be put in jail. I mean, these are words right out of the mouths of my cousins. You know,
wow, that they, your cousins and family say that to you.
Well, yeah, the cousins who reported us in 2016 to the authorities, unbeknownst to us, they called us in. And, or, you know, they called the authorities and reported us. And then since then, they had the files open that led directly to my arrest, January 3rd, 2018. And Alfred, you know, he had a home raid. His home was raided in the summer of 2016, that August. And that was all directly as a result of these files being opened on us, as a direct result of cousins who called us, you know, called the authorities, they reported us.
Well, you know, I can understand some of this. The positive side, I suppose, would have been if you didn't have these snitches in your family.
Are you still there?
I did. But the fact that they've now laid a formal charge, now the process has to start. So I suppose it does, there is a little bit of, if I may call it, a bit of a brighter light that the police wouldn't have gone after you if it wasn't for your stupid family members stabbing you in the back.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, and you did cut out for a moment there, so I didn't catch everything, but I can kind of imagine from the context. Now, B'nai B'rith Canada also likes to take credit for it all. You know, they've been on the case of the German government about us evil people here. You know, but anyway, there is, of course, a bright light in all of this because by persecuting us, they shine a light on,
yes,
on this whole lie, this whole ludicrous situation where even people who have not looked into it, they do say, gee, you know, okay, I might not agree with what they say, but throwing them in jail? Pardon me. And then a lot of people, they actually then start doing the research, start to look into it because it just does not sit well with them that people are thrown into jail for simply for saying something that even if they disagreed with us on what we were saying, that it does not sit well with people who still have a little bit of capacity to think straight. And I don't want to be, you know, throwing insults at the masses who have not yet reached that point, because first of all, I only woke up a few years ago to the lies and deceptions. I was basically living in zombie land up till relatively recently. And it really is a demonstration of their, well, quote unquote, success of their psychological warfare. I mean, that is the most, I'd say, the most lethal type of warfare, because what you end up having is a situation where many of our people are helping in the war against ourselves. And in the protocols of the Elders of Zion, it does say the Goy will become agents of their own destruction. You know, the Goy will become agents of their own destruction. And how can it come to that we become agents of our own destruction, or some members of our own people? And it's because of the quote-unquote re-education program. It's because of the non-stop indoctrination that's been going on for decades and decades. So my cousins, bringing it back to them, you know, they are good people. I really care for them. They are wonderful, good people, but they have been completely duped, and they think they are doing the right thing. They think they're doing the right thing. That's basically what has happened. They're not doing what they do, what they're doing out of evil hearts, but
they believe it's good.
Yeah, yeah. But who, you know, if we do have anger, it should be directed at those who did the re-education and those who are doing all the indoctrination and the programming of the lies and the falsehoods. And well, we can. There is a certain
Monica?
Group. Yeah.
How old are your cousins?
They are just barely a few years younger than me. It was the husbands of
they're not young. So they're not.
No.
They're not. I thought maybe they'd be in their 20s or 30s or so. Okay.
No,
they are adults and they're still fooled. Well, you know something. I've got a German neighbor two doors away from me. Lives a German family, husband and wife, and they got two daughters. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't get along that well with my German neighbor, but he's a nice guy. He does good stuff, and he's deeply Christian. And I had a good discussion with him some time back after I came back from the U.S. and Canada, and I had a chat with him the one day. And then I started talking to him about German history and other Germans that I know and the Holocaust and all that. And I said to him, you know, you Germans, you don't have anything that, you know, you don't need to feel guilty about anything because your people didn't do anything. And it came through very clearly to me that he lives in a la-la land where he clings desperately onto his Christian values, and he always says he says it, and you can see it in all his communications. He finds it important that he's living a good life, that he's good now, in mm-hmm. a similar vein to the way that you talk about them. And I said to him, but you know, I've studied your people's history, and you know, you didn't do all these nasty things to the Jews. The Jews are actually liars. And you won't believe what a struggle it was to actually talk to him. And he just prefers to live in his crap.
I've lost you, Jan.
German. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now you just cut out again and then it goes completely blank, but you're back. You're back. Yeah.
Okay. He said to me that he thinks the German people could have done better, you know, in the time of Hitler. And honestly, I mean, from what I've studied of your history, I think every move that your people made was very reasonable. There was nothing unreasonable about it. But
that's
quite shocked. I was quite shocked that this particular German. I have three different German friends here, and two of them are woken up, and they're older guys, and they're woken up, and they know the truth. But this younger German, I'm afraid, totally lost, thinks his people are evil, is happy to work with the stupid system here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him, watch out for Jews. Jews are liars, and he's in business and he deals with Jews.
Yeah.
So
you know, the sad part, Jan, the sad part about all of this is that the Jews have taken our good qualities that we have, and I'm sort of talking in a general sense. You know, we tend to have empathy, and we tend to have, empathy is a big one, right? Empathy meaning, you know, we care about others, we care about our communities, we care about others, even others who are outside of our community.
Yes.
And they have taken these good qualities and turn them against us. Oh, and another one of these qualities is trust. We are a high trust society.
Yes.
And so those qualities have been turned against us. And because of that high trust, we tend to believe what we're told. So, as you know, what we're told in school, I mean, it starts with children. Children are going to, by nature, believe what they're told by the elders, by their parents or by the teachers, this kind of thing. I mean, that's how we survived through the times, is that children needed to trust and believe their elders so that they would learn the skills of life and be able to survive and cope and thrive. Now, when an enemy is within your ranks and infiltrated into your society, but you don't see that enemy, they're not the enemy at the gate, as Cicero said, you know, the enemy at the gate is wears their flags, wears their colors very openly, and so they are less formidable than the enemy within that is camouflaged within your own people, then yes. It's the most dangerous enemy. And then they take these good qualities and turn them against us so that we are believing the lies and deceptions and get taken in by all this psychological warfare, and then the political correctness of what we're allowed to say and not allowed to say. And, you know, that's how it is, that we have been taken by this. And it's largely because of the positive attributes that we have. And those positive attributes are what enabled us to survive through the millennia in cold climates. We have to work together. We have to trust each other. We have to be able to help each other out. Now, that all works very, very well when we're a homogeneous society, that we are amongst our people, and then we do very well. We thrive, you know, and we have creativity. We can build things and invent things, and you know, that served us very well. But it does not serve us well when we are infiltrated by an enemy. And some people have called it, you know, pathological altruism, what we have. And that altruism comes from those good qualities that I just mentioned. And it becomes pathological when there is an enemy that has hidden itself amongst us and turned those things against us.
Well, Monica, I've got a bunch of comments here. Mm-hmm. You know, when I came back from America and Canada, and I just sat back and just thought about everything I'd seen, it just massively, massively reaffirmed to me. And it was this, and I can't tell you how important the Canadian leg of my trip was, because I went to many places and saw
you cut out again.
Yeah, you know, this thing is bad. I've had problems with the cutting out. I've had problems with the cutting out on other interviews. Can you hear me?
Oh yes. Yeah. So I waited about 10 seconds before I said anything, and then as soon as I spoke, you seemed to hear me. So next time you cut out, I'll say something
right away. I think we need to find another way to do interviews, because I'm actually running into this problem on other interviews as well, and it's starting to be an irritation. But anyway, yeah. Monica, problems aside, you know, just repeat, just ask me to repeat if anything goes missing. What I just want to say is that after my trip, and having talked to people who are awoken, I walked away with the, you know, it totally reinforced, in a massive way, it reinforced to me the simple fact that there is nothing wrong with white people. The only thing that's wrong with white people is that they are lied to their entire lives. That's all. They're just lied to all the time. And if they weren't lied to on such a massive and continuing scale, then they wouldn't do the stupid things that they're doing. Are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm listening, and you didn't cut out at all.
Okay. And you know, I was saying to the people back here, I said to them that, you know, they are under the impression that everybody out there hates us, because we're also in a sort of a semi-German situation, where our big crime is apartheid. So our crime is apartheid and racism and so on. And so it bothers the people here, because it's hammered home to them all the time in the mass media and by the politicians. And so I said to them that, you know, it's actually very refreshing to go to completely other countries, and then you speak to people who have awoken, who understand the truth, and it's actually very refreshing to speak to them, and it's actually a wonderful experience. And I said to them, it's fantastic. I've never experienced anything.
Oh, you just cut out there again. Hello.
Was inundated with hostility.
Sorry, you just cut out when you said you'd never experienced anything quite like that, and then you cut out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'd never experienced anything quite like this in the early days of the internet. In the early days of the internet, there was a lot of hostility when you spoke to people overseas. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, going there, meeting them face to face and being treated so well and being able to talk to them so frankly about topics that are taboo, and they agree and we agree and we all sit around the, you know, the coffee table and we talk and we're having fun. You know, for me, it was an incredible experience. And I told the people that, you know, the only thing that's a problem outside of South Africa is that the people just don't know. You people just don't know what's happened here. That's why you don't understand us. And it's the same thing about us with the Germans.
Yeah.
And I was trying to explain to people here, and I must tell you that people here are beginning to listen more and more, and their minds are becoming more and more open. And I tell them, I say to them, listen, you know how they lie.
Well, there you are. You know how they lie, and then I lost you.
But the Germans is a lie.
Sorry, just there you said, you know how they lie, and then you cut out. You know how they lie. Pick up from there.
Okay. I said to the people that, you know how they lie about us in South Africa. Well, they lie even more about the Germans.
They lie
so much more about the Germans. And people are starting to understand that. And I said to them, you've got to understand, you've got to listen to me. I had some very tough moments on the Jewish issue. And I literally almost alienated people here. I almost alienated a lot of whites here because some of them were turning to Israel. They were becoming all friendly to Jews, and they were talking about the Bible and Jews. And I went on a whole attack. I went and grabbed a whole bunch of stuff about Jews and circulated it among the people here. And I said to them, look at what's in the Talmud. Look at what these Jews say. Look at what the things they do. Look at those customs of theirs. Look at what they're saying over there. Look at how they're lying. Look at their maliciousness. Look at their involvement in communism. Look at their involvement in the murder of people in Russia. And people were quite shocked. I had a couple of people come back to me and say to me, wow, you've taught me things that I never would have believed. You've really opened my eyes about the Jews. And I said to them, you know, these are not people to toy with. You're dealing with dangerous people here. These are nasty people. They are setting you up for your destruction. And I just want to talk a bit about psychological warfare. You and your brother have spoken a lot about psychological warfare, and I totally agree with you that there is an intense psychological warfare. I think the most intense psychological warfare is against Germans.
Yes.
Probably the second most intense is against the whites of South Africa for the evil crime of apartheid and racism.
Yes. I would agree with you. Yes.
Right. So, but then there's also just the general anti-white psychological warfare, and then also the psychological
warfare.
And he's always treated women badly. He's always been a scumbag.
Just repeat the last thing you said, because you had talked about the psychological warfare against the whites in general, and then you're saying something more, and then you came back on. We said something about women. So I missed something there. You were saying psychological warfare.
Then the other psychological warfare is the psychological warfare aimed specifically at the white male.
You're right.
Right. Absolutely. There's a whole thing to turn the women against the men, the children against the father, all that sort of thing, you know. A far cry from the 1950s when they used to say, dad knows best. It's a whole different world now, right? Anyway, so one of the things that I've observed about whites in general everywhere is you know, Alex, Linda, and I, we've discussed things like obesity and people, you know, whites being really miserable and downtrodden. And when I look at the way that Jews and liberals deal with blacks, they applaud them. They say only good things about them. They'll even openly lie to make them look good. And then they'll do the opposite to whites. And do you know there was a newspaper here in South Africa that a few years ago, it's actually the biggest newspaper in Africa. They ran stories quite often about white males as criminals. Front page news headlines, trying to find crimes and always putting a white male face on the front page of the newspaper. And, you know, if whites were treated with the kind of, if whites got the treatment that they give the blacks, whites would not be so obese and would not lack so much confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You should see the praise that they heap on these non-whites for the most ridiculous things, even for things that would in white society be a non-achievement. And they heap praise on them like you cannot believe. And I think that this psychological warfare actually results in physical and mental illnesses in white people. And I mean, you yourself, I'm sure you've heard instances where Jews have said we must abolish the white race. And where Jews have even said to the white children or the white boys, you should consider committing suicide. So ask yourself, how much mental and even physical illness is caused by psychological warfare and liberalism as it continuously attacks white people all the time? No wonder white people don't feel good about themselves. No wonder there are white women who just become obese and men, you know, become dysfunctional and so forth. I think that if all of this liberalism and psychological warfare were taken away, you might see quite a big change in white people, because
absolutely,
you agree.
Also, the substance abuse rates would go way down if people were suddenly woken up, because that actually does happen. I know Alfred has talked about that a lot, like before he went to jail, and he would meet people who finally their eyes were open to what's going on, and they would say, "Oh, this gives me purpose in life." And then suddenly they stop drinking, they stop, you know, their drug abuse and whatnot, because now they have a purpose in life, you see. So that's another aspect of it. And I agree 100% with what you've just said about this not feeling good about ourselves, and it makes a person ill, actually. And then you combine that, Jan, combine that with the poison that they are feeding the children. I'm talking about in the education system. You know, you could also say poison quite literally in the foods and additives and spraying, but I'm talking now about the education system, and what they call sex education is actually porno pushing and perversion pushing, and it's this total poisoning of young minds with stuff that is absolute filth and poison. It's just degeneration, a degeneracy that is being pushed upon the children. And it actually, I believe, changes the structure of their brains in a way that is quite toxic. Excuse me. And so you combine what you have just said about, you know, guilt ridden, we're not feeling good about ourselves and all this, with this poison that actually is being injected into the brains through this so-called sex education, and you have a recipe for disaster. And then what you also get is organizations springing up. I don't know if this is happening in South Africa among the whites, but you have it in the UK for sure, and in Canada there are organizations springing up where young people are signing up, they're signing pledges to not have children. I mean, these are white.
Oh, that is dreadful.
Now, isn't that the ultimate?
That is hideous.
Yes.
Oh, that is hideous. Here in Africa, nobody ever discusses birth control with the blacks. Nobody. The only time they talk about any kind of sexual prevention is to use condoms to stop AIDS. That's all. They never talk about smaller families, less children. Never, never. Black people here, a black woman can have children from multiple fathers, and nobody's concerned about it. They have got they get pregnant. They have lots of children. They can't even feed their own children. They will go to a hospital and they'll say, "Oh, my child is sick, and I don't have money, but my child is sick." And then the hospitals just have to take them in and look after them. They don't do anything to think about tomorrow. Nothing at all. With regard to food, with regard to children, they have as many children as they want, illegitimate. Nobody complains ever. It is hideous if they're making white children say that they're not going to have kids. That is hideous. That is hideous.
And then also, I'll add another element to this perfect recipe for disaster, is they inject in us the message of no future and no hope. And they do this in various ways. And an example of that would be this in the film industry. You know, they'll pat themselves on the back for films that have a certain message. And how they pat themselves on the back is awarding all kinds of awards to these films. So if there's a film that has a no hope and no future message, it wins, a Canadian Film of the Year. And that was the case here last year. The Fireflies Are Gone, a film that had a dreadfully dark message of, well, there is no hope and there is no future. And this was, you know, the protagonist of the film was a young high school graduate who... That was it. Like, there was no redemption at the end of the film or anything. That I kept thinking, well, she's got so much going for her. Come on, there will be some kind of a redemption for her, that she's going to, you know, break through all that darkness and, you know, come out on top. But no such luck. And this is the message they want us to have, that there's no future, no hope. And if you believe that, especially as a young person, you believe that, well, then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, doesn't it? So we need to reject that. We absolutely need to reject that. And so far, Jan, we've painted a picture that's pretty dark. But I know from your lectures and your talks and videos and whatnot that you don't actually put that message of no hope, no future out there at all. I've gained a lot of...
Absolutely, Monica. And I've even gone so far, I've got a couple of old National Socialist friends, one or two, and they are so despondent over here. And I get so angry with them. One day I sent both of them a voice message on the phones, and I said to them that it's a good thing the youngsters don't get to hear how they speak, because the youngsters would go and kill themselves. I said to them, you know, you must think about the kinds of things that you're saying. And anyway, I don't believe that in National Socialism that there ever was a defeatist kind of attitude to anything. If you look at the things that Adolf Hitler said, if you look at the whole attitude of the German people and their leaders, that even in the darkest hours, no matter how bad things went for Germans and Germany with the Jews turning the entire world against them, there never was a time, you will find that there's literally never a time where your people gave up. Your people stood through the worst of the worst that anybody can possibly even live through. And there were no complaints. Everybody knew his duty. Everybody did his thing until the end. And I mean, Hitler himself, there's a lovely quote from Hitler where he says, he He who wants to live, let him fight in this world of eternal struggle.
Yes.
And to me, that is like a spiritual message, man. It doesn't come clearer than that. And in actual fact, when I talked to some of the Christians over here, I had some discussions one day with one Christian said to me, "Oh, are you saying that there's never going to be a time where there's peace in the world forever?" I said to him, that is nonsense. There never can be peace, and you shouldn't even want it, because struggle and competition is what the world is about. It's always been that way, and it always will be. And to imagine that you're just going to sit on a couch for a million years and do nothing, it's actually not even healthy for you. And I don't know if you've ever followed the works of Dr. William Pierce.
Yes, I have.
Right. Dr. William Pierce himself, a scientist and a national socialist, he said that peace, that a long period of peace would bring nothing but degeneration. And, you know, we need to get the boys especially, they must think in terms of, I have an enemy, and so what? This is how I'm going to deal with him. And the older people should give the younger people advice on how to live their lives, how to prepare for their struggle, and so on. And I think that is actually healthy. I think it breeds strength. This whole sort of learned helplessness, where you're always sitting and waiting for somebody to come and save you. And I tell some of the Christians as well, you know, this business of praying and waiting, you know, that's actually what I liked about, there's this guy who was arrested the other day. His name is Harry Knudsen. And believe it or not, he was a pastor. And he was such a devout Christian, he actually walked through South Africa carrying a crucifix, can you believe? And this pastor is the guy who then decided that he's going to attack the government and fight them. And he's now in jail. But I listened to one of his video messages that he recorded and sent out. And he spoke to people about the Bible and his view of the Bible. And he said that, and he's a pastor, he said, you know, people must not expect God to intervene in every aspect of their daily lives. You must get up off your ass, and if you see something is wrong, you must go and do something about it. And I prefer that kind of interpretation to life than the helplessness, the waiting for somebody else. Get up and do something yourself.
I mean, we have been blessed with this thing called free will. And free will means that everything is not just ordained, you know, preordained, and that we just sit around waiting for things to happen. You're right about that. I mean, I probably don't agree with everything that you said just now, because I do believe that there is this epic struggle between good and evil taking place on the earth now. And it really is a deep, you know, good versus evil struggle. So I don't think I necessarily agree that there always have to be wars, that there always, you know, I think it is because of this evil entity that is amongst us. And they do say they worship Satan. They say it quite openly. I think that it goes way back, like many, 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 many thousands of years, way before Christ. And, you know, it's the Lucifer and his band of fallen angels, basically, I think. I mean, I don't really... I shouldn't talk too much about that, because it's not what I really know very much about. But my sense is that it is this epic struggle between good and evil. But I know what you're saying in terms of when people are too comfortable for too long, they do become degenerate and that kind of thing. But there are other kinds of struggles that we could be having that are not necessarily going to lead to... struggles that are not war, but that save us from being too degenerate. You know what I mean?
I understand. There are lots of struggles in life that are non that are non-life-threatening.
Yeah, non-warfare, I suppose. But, you know, yes. I do want to come back to this thing about they wanting us to be hopeless and always in fear and thinking there is no future, and that we need to reject that. And one of the things that gives me hope, and it's a little bit of a paradox, but what the thing that does give me hope is the fact that they, our enemy, and that is, you know, organized Jewry, that they are clamping down so insanely on what we are allowed to say or not say, and criminalizing dissent to such a degree that the paradox that it is, it still does give me hope, because it shows that they are very worried. They are in a panic mode, basically, that they are clamping down so hard on anybody who speaks the truth. That gives me hope, because it means that they haven't got this all neatly, you know, sewn up in a bag and yes. won and finished, right? I mean, why would yes. they worry if they had it all?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Monica, I am ever more convinced that they don't have total control, yeah. and that they actually put out bold lies to demoralize people, to make people think everything is hopeless.
That's right.
And they are, and it's shocking them that this stuff is working. And you know what? I also take it as a big, you know, I think we should all give ourselves a big pat on the back. To say, hey, look at us. We aren't millionaires or billionaires, but just a few of us getting up and talking and putting out some truths, and look at what the result is. A, yeah. look at how many people are listening to us, and B, look at how it's scaring the hell out of the system.
That's you right. Know, they are very afraid of us. They are very, very afraid of us. That's why they criminalize us. And that does show that they are not this monolithic, huge entity that, you know, without any cracks or anything. No. Their house of cards is actually very frail. And that is why they are clamping down so hard. And I do want to bring it to something we discussed before we went on air. Henry Hoffenmeyer and his trial, and because I did give you the update about Alfred, and I'd like to bring in this very, very hardworking truth teller named Henry Hoffenmeyer. Have you heard of him, Jan?
Yes, I know that he was a good friend of Alfred. Alfred told me about him before Alfred went to jail, and I had a little bit of contact with him. And just due to my own struggles, I just haven't had the time to get back to him. But I was concerned about his trial, because I believe he's also on trial for something.
Yes. Now, there would be a difficulty for you if you don't speak German and he doesn't speak English. So that would probably also throw an obstacle in the way of your communications. Henry is a little bit younger than us. I think he's in his mid-40s or so. And he was born in the old DDL, which is the old East Germany. Yes. People from that area are generally more able to have their eyes opened to the truth because they were born in a police state, a more overt police state, and they were not quite as susceptible to the brainwashing, because many of them realized and understood that what they're being told is lies and propaganda. So that actually has enabled them to wake up more easily now in this, you know, post-1989 reunified Germany than the West Germans of a certain age anyway. So he's been working at this for a long time. He has a website called End of the Lie, or in German, Ende der Lüge. End of the Lie, and he's done a lot of work over the course of many years. You know, he started out, well, I don't know if this is how he started out, but one of the first things that I learned about him was he wrote a big, long letter called End of the Lie in German, and sent it to many, many, many people in Germany. He sent it to all the judges, all the chiefs of police, all the people like that. He did not send it to the politicians because he knew they were a lost cause anyway. They're bought and sold anyway.
Uh-huh.
But people in high, in sort of the higher positions of intermediary power, you could say, like the yeah. actual institutions, like I say, the police forces and the in the justice system, the judges and you know, this kind of thing, lawyers, whatnot. And yeah. anyway, he is now in and out of the courts. He's not in jail, even though he's been charged and sentenced and whatnot, and these are all things that are under appeal. And he's not in jail physically because these things are under appeal. Now, in the case of Alfred, they did put him in jail before the verdict was in anyway, because they said he was a flight risk because of the impending severity of his sentence. And they figured he might just, you know, leave and go to Canada. Even though he's happily married and been in Germany for decades. So I think they just wanted to have him in their clutches. But with Henry, he's a German. He's, you know, he doesn't have another country, or they don't deem him a flight risk. So he's in and out of the courts. And he did at one time spend 3 or 4 days in jail. He called it a trial run investigate, or sort of like a, you know, they gave him a little, at the time he said it in German, I can't remember exactly what he said, but to translate it, sort of like he treated it like a little sabbatical, like a little resting time of 3 days and just check out the place, you know. That was while I was in jail. So 2018, and now he's already, there was one thing he was sentenced to for posting a graphic and 4 months for that. And I don't know how many other months for this and that and the other thing. They keep throwing these sentences on him, and he's still going through the appeal process. Now, I hope that he can stay out of jail and carry on with his good work, but it does look like the writing might be on the wall that he'll end up a political prisoner as well, in the literal sense, and end up in jail when these appeals run out, just like the appeals ran out with Ursula Haverbeck, 91-year-old, who has been in prison now for a year and a half already, something like that.
Wow.
And then Sylvia Stolz is in jail now again, and this time it's for giving a speech in Switzerland in which she
yes. Oh, that's a lovely speech. I've got the video of it. It's beautiful.
Yes, and in that speech, she simply described the legal situation in Germany and described what had happened to her when she was defending Ernst Zundel back in, I don't know, 2006 or 7. And she's now in jail again because of the speech. So here's, in a nutshell, how it works. You are not allowed to say X, Y, Z. Then you are not allowed to explain how you reach your conclusions when you're in court on trial for saying X, Y, Z. And then afterwards, you are not allowed to describe that legal situation of not being able to, you know, explain your conclusions of X, Y, Z. I mean, it is so ludicrous. But again, the insanity of it all and how far they have gone with this, that does indicate to me that they are very, very afraid of the truth coming out ultimately, you see. So, yeah, I think that if we can draw hope from something, it is that they are so afraid of us discussing the truth and us seeing the truth and us spreading the truth. That is absolutely, you know, how I see it can
bring entire countries down. It's that serious.
That's right and I
want to ask you, how much jail time did Sylvia get for her speech?
18 months.
Months.
And I would predict that she does not get out a single day early. Now, if you go to jail in Germany for any crime, like violent crime, this or that, you know, whatever, theft, fraud, or murder even, especially if it's your first time in jail. Now, this isn't Sylvia's first time in jail. She was in jail, like I say, for doing her job too well as a lawyer, you know, for 3 1/4 years. But these political prisoners, which is what she is, which is what Alfred is, which is what Horst Mahler, Ursula Haverbeck, These are political prisoners. They do not get out early. But others who do these serious crimes, real crimes, they get out early. Sometimes it's on half time or two thirds. They get out early as long as they've been behaving in jail. And I can tell you, every one of these political prisoners, they are well-behaved, good, nice people. You know, like Ernst Sundel, apparently the staff, they all loved him. And Alfred gets along very well with all the prison guards and whatnot.
Oh, so, it's hideous. So you see, it's better to take a knife and go and stab somebody than to open your mouth and tell the truth.
Back to your story in South Africa, the joke. Absolutely. About,
In Henry Hoffmeyer's case, are they charging him for that letter and other similar crimes?
You know, yes, I believe so. I haven't followed every detail of the charges. And sometimes, you know, you see these charges and they're pages and pages and pages and pages and in very complex legalese language in German. Now, I do speak German and read German and all that. But when it comes to this kind of legalese language, so I haven't always read everything. But I do believe that it's for that original letter, that document, End of the Lie. And many things since then. Like, he continues to be very, very active online and has a weekly panel discussion with people and also articles, lots and lots of articles. He's very, very hardworking individual. So there's lots of, shall we
material.
Say,
material.
Lots that's
of,
the word.
Lots of material. Lots of crimes being committed on his blog.
Lots of truth-telling.
But and how much jail time has he been sentenced to?
I'm not sure about that either, but I think somewhere I saw like that all these months for this and months for that would have added up to 3 or 4 years, but then they said one and a half years in total. I don't know how they've calculated all this. Also, I do want to point out that the state that he lives in Germany is quite different than Bavaria, the state where Alfred lives and where I was in jail. And it is, he himself has said that the justice system there and the people there are much more relaxed about these things, you know, these speech crimes, so-called. And they go lighter on the folks there in that state than in Bavaria. Bavaria is particularly strict. Now, I don't know if it's just coincidental that that is where Adolf Hitler had his headquarters in Germany was.
Yes.
Munich and that kind of thing. And it's, so I don't know if that's part of it, you know, where they got to go at the heart of the beast, so to speak. But
yes.
Anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens with Henry, but people might want to visit. He's got a couple of different websites. One is called Ende der Lüge in German. Now, I don't know if you put that in English, End of the Lie, you would probably find it if you put it in your search bar. I'm not sure. He's also got another one, We Are Alfred, or Wir sind Alfred, or if you put in Wir sind Monika or We Are Monika, those all go to another website. They would all link in. So
you can type it for me and I'll put it in the description when I put out the audio.
Yeah, we'll do that after the interview. That's the best.
That will be good. Then people can go there because I'm concerned about him, poor guy. But I heard he was a very good guy and very dedicated. So
yes,
he's giving it his all. You know,
he's
typical,
giving it his all.
Awesome. You know, what a person.
And he's like Alfred a little bit in that he doesn't lose his spirit. And that's the case for Alfred, too. He doesn't lose his spirit. In fact, he's really, really got his mind is very active and his imagination. He's just writing the greatest letters, Alfred is. And then with Henry, same thing. He doesn't lose his spirit. He doesn't become a worrywart. He doesn't go gloom and doom. type of thing. Like, he knows this is a epic struggle. We're doing this for our very existence, our future, everything. You know, I mean, everything hinges on this. And so we're at the forefront of this. You, me, Alfred, Henry, and lots of these other people. And there are many, many, many good people working hard on this struggle of our time. I mean, there are just so many. I learn of more every day. And that also gives me great hope. Because for every website that I come across now, or new documentary, new website, new article, I think, well, there's 1,000 more people other than that person that is also woken up, you know, or more, like thousands and thousands. Like, it's just, there are so many people working very, very hard at this epic struggle, struggle of our time, struggle of all times, really. And that gives me hope too. I do believe that we are soon at a tipping point for the masses to really start getting their eyes opened and wake up. And boy, oh boy, when the sleeping giant will arise again, you see. So that's
Monica,
how
I feel exactly the same way. I look at the amount of work and things that some people put in. Even when I was there in Canada and America, I'd look at different people, and as I went with Paul Fromm, and I saw some of the people who work with him, and I talked to them, and I observed them as human beings. You know, some of them are quite poor, some of them are in ill health, and yet they are so committed. And I was very pleased by what I saw. I could see that there's an inner spirit that's coming out there. And you know what? They're messing with the wrong people. White people have got a lot of spirit, and we're a tough and determined people. If they keep on kicking us around, they're going to see what they're going to awaken here. And when I just see different people coming out at it, and even here in South Africa, I like ask people, you know, what awoke you to this or to that. And here in South Africa, I must tell you, we used to be such a closed society, such a closed-minded society. And now you must see how pleasurable it is to talk to whites here. I'm finding it so much more enjoyable. That they're so much more open to things. They're listening. They're debating. Mm-hmm. They are teaching themselves stuff. You know, I think great things are happening, and I think that I don't think that we are sick in any way at all. There's nothing wrong with us. You know, I've even watched music that comes from young people. I've looked at music where young women dress up and do songs like from the 50s and things like that, all nice and clean and lovely and everything. And I've seen so many examples of things that show me the youth are not degenerate, the adults are not degenerate. They just need a little bit of truth. Once they got the truth in their minds, they're home free, man. Then they start on a journey, and they are very serious about that journey. It's really beautiful.
Yes, I've seen that as well, about the you know, people doing what they call retro music, you know.
And
also dressing up in sort of traditional outfits again for celebrations and whatnot. That's also quite popular, and an interest in that. And that's what we have to really resurrect and actively resurrect our love of our culture, and just first of all a knowledge of our culture and whatnot, which has largely been, you know, disappeared through the pop culture. But that's, we have to work actively at that. So it's not just truth telling about our history, but we need to be very actively resurrecting our love and appreciation of our culture and our ancestors, and because this has all been artificially severed, you know. So, and the other thing I wanted to say, Jan, is that this should also give us hope that, you know, we have been down before. And why I believe that is that when I was in prison, I had a book of poetry in my hands for a couple of weeks, and it was all poetry by German poets through the ages. Like, some of these went back almost a couple of thousand years. Those were quite few and far between, and then there were more poems from more recent times. However, some of these poems that I read, oh my goodness, you would think they were written now, in terms of how they talked about, gee, you know, we're asleep, and boy, but when we finally, you know, got stirred into, you know, aroused into wakefulness, and then our spirit rose again, and we were able to stand up and fight. And I thought, wow, these poets were writing just in the last few years, but no, they were hundreds of years old, some of these. So it leads me to believe that the Germanic people, and I think that white people in general, but Germanic people have been down before, you know, and rose up. And it is this going to sleep, you know, when things are very comfortable, or when we're infiltrated by the enemy. And I mean, you know, going back to this question of being infiltrated, well, we should ask ourselves, or the Jews should ask themselves, why were they kicked out of country after country after country over the last couple of thousand years that we know of? And before that, I'm sure it happened before that many, many times, you see. So it's not just because we are born with some gene that suddenly one day we wake up and say, gee, we want to kick these people out. Like, that's how they make it out to be, like, you know, this, oh, anti-Semitism is like a disease or something. My goodness. No, it's Monica, because we finally figured out.
Those Jews know full well what they got up to, but just have to lie to everybody. If Jews had to come out and tell the truth, then people would say, yes, but you deserved it. So that's why the Jews lie. And they know they must just lie and lie. In fact, I must tell you something. There's something I want to tell you, that while I was busy looking at ideas of how I'm going to educate some people here, people were asking me questions about the Holocaust. And I actually stumbled on some stuff that I think you might find interesting. Mm-hmm. I was digging into Holocaust stuff, and at a point, I discovered that when the German army was invading Russia, and that in and of itself, when you understand the history, it was actually a preemptive strike. Germany had no intentions of invading Russia. Russia was about 2 weeks away from invading Germany, and Hitler just beat them to the punch. He hit them before they hit him. He had all the information. But anyway, as the German army was going through the Ukraine and those places, some years before, you had the Holodomor, and the Holodomor was when the Jews in charge of communism had gone and they had starved 5 or 7 million people to death in the Ukraine. And so when Hitler's troops were moving into the Ukraine, these Ukrainians had a deep hatred of the Jews, who had just roughly 8 years before murdered millions of their own people. So either before or when the German army arrived, these civilians, I think in many cases they actually did this before the German army arrived. Before the German army arrived, the civilians began killing the Jews. And it's the only time, you know the concept of necklacing in South Africa, where the blacks punish their traitors by burning them to death. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was looking at this stuff, I was thinking to myself that the only time that white people, let's call it necklace somebody else, is when whites are dealing with Jews. Whether it's the Jew who murdered Mary Fagan there in America, or whether it was the Ukrainians. The only time that whites actually go out as a body of civilians and they murder people is with Jews. And I found actual photographs. I found actual proper photographs. The first and only photographs that I've ever seen of any Jews getting killed in World War II, and it was not by Germans. No Germans were present. White Ukrainian civilians were beating and killing Jews. And I saw photographs where they grabbed Jewish women. And the people, of course, that they were going after were probably people who had worked in the murder of their own people just a few years before.
So they this happened in Germany, did it, Jan? This was happening in Germany? These Ukrainians were in Germany, or
these people were in the Ukraine.
So
these Ukrainians were in the Ukraine, and there were Jews among them who'd been helping the communists.
Right.
So now as the German army was approaching, these civilians started hunting down and killing the Jews who had been such a nightmare for them in the past. And I even saw photographs where they grabbed Jewish women, they stripped them naked, they beat them. One of the photographs I saw, a Jewish woman stripped naked was running for her life. You could see these people are going to kill her. And I also came across a mention from a talk of David Irving, where he said that when you study World War II and you actually study the military transcripts, there are many occasions where the German army arrives in a town or a city and they send a message back to Hitler and they say, "We have arrived in this place and the civilians are busy killing the Jews. And what must we do?" And then Hitler sends back the message. He says, "Leave the civilians alone," because he obviously feels for the civilians. He knows why they are doing what they're doing and that it's just. And I even came across, I was reading a book about General von Manstein. General von Manstein, who was the greatest German strategist of World War II, and I came across references to where he spoke about orders that Hitler had sent out about Jewish partisans and things. And von Manstein sent a message to his troops. He said that Jewish Bolshevism, communism, must be destroyed at all costs. You know, it is so clear, and we in Africa, we know what communism is because we fought communism here in Africa, and it was just...
Hello? Just cut out there. Jan? You just cut for a moment. You're saying it was only for a few seconds, just for a few seconds, so you know what
communism is
in South Africa. Yeah.
Yes, And it was so astounding to actually get this history and to understand more about what happened in World War II. But I was absolutely amazed. And do you know that the Jews try to angle the civilians killing the Jews? They try to pretend that the Nazis were somehow involved. But it's clear from the photographs and everything, this is junk. But
I'm not surprised. Of course, they're going to twist everything around so that,
absolutely. But it showed me the anger, the kind of anger that whites had innately, civilian whites had developed for Jews over a period of time. It's very much like when they went to hang the murderer of Mary Fagan. I forget his name, that Jew in America.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're exactly what you're talking about, but it's not going to come to me now either under pressure.
so, but you know, it just shows you.
Yeah, just cut out. It just shows you.
Of that Jew, did the thing drop again?
Yeah, it just shows you, and then it cut. It just shows you.
I just wanted to say something, Mary.
Yeah, Mary Fagan, and the one that murdered her, and the people wanted to lynch him. And
oh, Leo Frank.
Leo Frank. Very good. Yeah.
Do you know something that I read? I found a fascinating account. Do you know that the execution, the lynching of Leo Frank? Do you know that it wasn't even common people who organized it? Do you know that a state senator, along with either a judge, I think a state senator, there may have been a judge or at least an attorney, it was a bunch of high-ranking men who actually looked at what was happening, and they could see that the Jews were going to get Leo Frank off of the death sentence, and it was
cutting out. Hello.
So
just cut out. You're back now. But so it was these high-ranking guys who could see that the Jews wanted to
organize the lynching. Yeah. So it wasn't just like some noob at the bottom. These were serious people, and they said, look, this Jew's going to get off. And he had been found guilty in the trial. So, you know, he'd gone through the process, and he was due to be hanged. And now these Jews are about to get him off the hook.
Yeah.
So I was quite stunned by the organization, and it was serious people, not low-level nonsense. But I want to tell you the greatest thing I found, Monica, the greatest thing I uncovered. I've got a book here. Every now and then when I have a chance, I grab one of my books and I browse through it, especially if it's a history book. I browse through it to see if I can find something about Jews, you know, now that my eyes are opened. And I came across a fascinating story. There is a place in the Soviet Union. I think it's called Babi Yar. I think that's what it's called. I'll check later.
Yeah.
But there's a place in the Soviet Union where none other than George Bush Senior went there to give a speech at the setting up of a monument to 200,000 Jews who were apparently killed by the Nazis.
Ah.
Okay, and listen to this. This is going to blow your mind. So there's a monument to the execution of 200,000 Jews at this place. So guess what? While reading about this, it turns out that the only historical evidence that this event ever took place, because there are no bodies there. There's no, as usual, there's no forensics, okay? Nobody's gone and dug up a body of a Jew, okay? There's never in the entire Holocaust, there's never been a post-mortem on a Jew that was killed by the Nazis, okay?
No, that's so right. Well, or if there were post-mortems, there was not a single one that showed gas, evidence of gas. Actually, I think you're right that there were no post-mortems.
I doubt there's ever been a post-mortem.
That's right. I think you are right, but I know for a fact that there's not a single post-mortem that shows evidence of gas in a body.
Well, let me tell you this. So it turns out that in this book that I was reading, which was published maybe 20 years ago, that in this book I was reading, they said, well, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that there was a single survivor, we would never have even known that the Nazis had killed 200,000 Jews. So it turns out that the only source for the story of the killing of 200,000 Jews is a Jewish woman who says that she survived. So it turns out that this Jewish woman testified to this massacre at the Nuremberg trials, and she was the only person to testify that this event had ever even occurred.
Wow.
But listen, it gets better. So then the question is, how did this Jewish woman survive?
Well,
she says that the Nazis came and they rounded them all up and they took them to this place where there was a big hole, and they were busy killing the people, and the people were falling in on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And in this case, they weren't gassed. The Nazis were shooting them. So how did she survive being shot? Well, she said that they took her to the edge of the pit, and the Germans were shooting from behind. So the Jewish woman, and this is in writing in the book, the Jewish woman said that as she was standing on the edge of the pit, she heard the bullet coming. So she heard the bullet coming, and she jumped into the pit before the bullet hit her.
Oh, my goodness.
So she fell into the pit, and then later she managed to crawl out of it.
They're amazing, aren't they?
Now, listen to this. So I looked at this, and I thought, you heard the bullet coming? I was like, I've read a lot of military history. I've spoken to soldiers. I've never in my life heard of a soldier who successfully ducked a bullet because he heard the bullet coming. Mm-hmm. So I did some research, and I was talking to some of my Afrikaans friends, and one of the guys who's a hunter, he said to me, Jan, you will feel the bullet before you hear the bullet. And I went and I checked, and bullets travel faster than the speed of sound. A rifle bullet travels faster than the speed of sound. You cannot hear a bullet coming. So her story is obviously total bullshit. And upon closer examination, it turns out she's an actress. She's an actress. So this woman has basically single-handedly invented a fucking lie of a Holocaust that never took place.
Amazing, isn't it? It truly is amazing.
It just boggles the mind. One
of the reasons they criminalize us, or so-called reasons, it's not their reason. We know the reason is they don't want us to tell the truth. But their stated reasons for us not being permitted to speak these truths is because we are hurting the feelings, or we are, you know, not respecting the memory of the dead and all this stuff. So it's all about hurt feelings.
All nonsense. It's like at Treblinka, there were some people who wanted to go and dig up the Jewish bodies at Treblinka to do some autopsies. There had been somebody who went there with a ground penetrating radar and found that the soil had never been disturbed and there was nothing underneath. Anyway, other whites went to Treblinka and they said to the Jews, you know, we want to do autopsies on these people. And you know what the chief rabbi of Poland said? He said, no, we must not disturb the dead. You know, we must respect them.
This was preventing from doing autopsies, eh?
Anyway, so Monica, a race of liars, a race of scum. I just try to say to people, everything you've ever heard about Germans is a lie. End of story. You've heard nothing but lies about Germans. And whenever they can, they try and twist it. Oh, the Nazis. Mm-hmm. Zero evidence for anything.
It's pretty much everything is on its head, isn't it? So, but you know, a friend of mine said a little saying here. He says, fish swim, birds fly, Jews lie. pretty much says it, doesn't it? Are you still there?
Yes, I am. I had my thing on mute, and my apologies.
No,
oh, that is awesome. That is awesome. That is awesome. Yes, there it is, a racial truth. My final question for you about your brother, him moving, does that affect is he in any way better or worse off? Because a mutual friend of ours kind of hinted that in some ways it's worse.
I don't know yet. I have not heard any news directly of the living conditions there. I mean, actually, a couple of letters already got through to his wife and to Henry, and they went very quickly. So that tells me that perhaps the letters are no longer being screened through the judge or prosecutor, but they'll be screened still from the prison staff. But it did, the mail moved a lot faster, and he was just in the take-up wing so far, so he has not yet been put into a cell where he will then be staying. And he did say the food was better. He also was told that the visiting time will go up, which is good. I mean, the visiting time is very limited, very limited. He was getting 2 hours per month at the Stadelheim, which then was going to go down if he had not been moved. It was going to go down to 1 hour per month, but he has been moved into this other prison, and these rules go by prison, not state by state. And apparently there he will, or, you know, he will be able to have twice that amount of visiting.
Okay, and excellent.
Yeah, so that's one thing good, and the food he said was better. But now, as far as anything else, I really have no direct information yet. My hope is that things will be better. So we'll see. We'll see. We haven't got news yet. And the address, I'll just quickly give my website, and maybe you can link it below, but I'll just say it quickly.
Okay.
freespeechmonica.wordpress.com. So Free Speech Monica, that's all one word, and Monica with a K, .wordpress.com. And the sticky post, so the post that appears at the top there, is information of how you can write a letter to Alfred, a letter or a postcard or whatever. And the new address is there, the address of the prison where he has just been moved to. And there are also addresses for several of the other political prisoners in Germany. And I'm sure there are many more that I just don't know about. But anyway, there's Ursula Haverbeck, Sylvia Stolz, and Horst Mahler on there as well on my website. And I've posted some articles, updates on what's going on. And just recently I posted a letter from him, from Alfred. And, you know, he really is quite spirited and doing well that way, you see. So he's not doom and gloom. He's not losing hope. And he feels really quite optimistic and is in good spirits. So that might be a good place to end on, Jan?
Yeah. No, that is perfect. I will pop you an email, and we'll just confirm a few writing things. And then, because I was wondering whether it's better or worse, or whether they are making new trouble for him or not. But you say that there isn't, that things are looking, not looking too bad.
Well, I mean, he's in jail for 4 years, and he's served almost a year and a half so far. Actually, when I say that sentence, it just sounds so bizarre, served. Who's he serving? He's serving the devil with time, right?
Yes.
they're forcing him. But anyway, that's, I guess, the lingo. But so he's been in jail for a year and 5 months so far, and has just under 4 years in total. So, yeah, you can do the math. He's in there for a long time.
Yeah, still another two and a half.
But as far as I know right now, there are not going to be further court cases right now. Although, you know, I was saying it could go round and round like merry-go-round. Even during his last word of this latest go-round, the appeal that just happened in November, Alfred, you know, the prisoner still gets the last word. And in that last word, again, the judge basically shut him down and said, oh, you're doing new crime. We'll have to do new charges. So, again, this is the trial for the crime that he did by speaking in the original trial, and you could just keep going round and round. You go to jail, you go to trial, you speak new crime, you go to jail some more and do new trial some more and speak new crime, and over and over and over. This is how it is. Anyway, but as far as it looks to me right now that he's been moved to this other jail, he's got 4 years to do in total, and I don't think that there are appeals. And by the way, the appeal that Alfred put in regarding the original verdict of 38 months, that was rejected, just outright rejected. It never happened. They just did not accept an appeal process. So that is firm anyway, and then this latest one now is firm as well.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's terrible, huh? This is what happens when you're not in control of your own country.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They are not a sovereign country. People should know that, and most Germans do not know that. They certainly do not teach the school children in Germany that they are not a sovereign country, and in fact, they are taught that they have total freedom of speech. That's what they believe until you start talking about the Holocaust. And then they say, oh, but that's different. That's different. And that's good, they say. That's what my cousin said, actually. Oh, yeah, we have total freedom of speech, but not when it comes to the Holocaust. And that is good, they said, because that is somehow this singularity that should never, ever, ever be discussed or disputed or questioned. Yeah.
Man, that is nasty. Well, Monica, in certain respects, there are glimmers of hope.
And yes.
At least he got 10 months off on the second sentence.
Yes.
And you know, maybe some of this is causing judges and other people quietly to reflect as well.
I hope as they put
more and more Germans in jail, and they are not putting invaders in jail, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, as Henry Hoffmeier says very, very eloquently, he says, for sure, there must be some judges or lawyers or this or that in the system who are actually good people, who really sincerely are trying to do a good job. And these people, they must be absolutely squirming in their boots right now and trying to figure out, oh, how do we get ourselves off of this train, that this is going to be a train wreck and we want to get off and this is all wrong. And there, somewhere there's going to be movement in the right direction from within those ranks, even though we know that there is just so much corruption within the justice system, and might I just say many, many, many Jews have those places, you know, occupy those positions, but they're not all, you know, not all these positions are occupied by Jews, and many of these positions are occupied by the, you know, Shabbat Goy, you could say, the useful idiots, the people who have been completely duped and re-educated and whatnot into believing that they're actually, you know, they believe the lies, but there must be many among them. I mean, they got to have some element, some degree of intelligence to get to those positions, and there must be many among them who know darn well. They know darn well what's going on, and you've got to hope that there's a small percentage of them that are actually good people who are going to, you know, do the right thing at some point. And I mean, this does happen all the time. And then, sometimes we hear about, you know, disappearances or accidents or this kind of thing. But we just have to hope. I mean, I don't want to go on about that, too, because then, you know, that's what causes people to keep their mouths shut and go along with the system, because they are scared for their lives. They are scared for their livelihoods, their children, their families, this and that. But, you know, it is just getting so blatant and so far down this road that it's going to shift. It has to shift. There's just going to be an earthquake of shifting going on here really darn soon.
Monica, in my own experiences and my travels and my talks to different people, especially police and military people in different countries, I've come to the conclusion that there are quite a lot of people in these systems that are not as evil as you think.
Yes.
They are humans as well. And I've had some very frank discussions and some interesting contacts over the years. And I will tell you, I do not believe that the Jews control every inch of every country. And that especially when it comes to police, military, intelligence people, that there are people in there who take their job seriously, who believe in their original oaths, they believe in defending their country. You know, a very fascinating thing that I still I looked at, and I still want to look at it again, is that story where there were 200 German soldiers who were plotting to assassinate Merkel and others.
Oh.
And are you aware of that?
I don't think I heard about that.
Last year already, that story came out, and I hadn't actually published it, and I began to look a bit at it. And I've still, even after I started looking at it, I haven't published it, but I actually need to get back to it. There was a situation about a year ago where it was 200 members of the German military were rounded up and put on trial. They had a plan to execute, I think, I'm not sure if it was Merkel alone, but they were going to kill politicians and seize control of Germany.
Wow.
And 200 soldiers. And at first, and when I went and I did more reading about it, it came out that various intelligence agencies infiltrated these troops, and they established very clearly that these guys were determined to assassinate top politicians and take over Germany, or knock out the political elite or something. And so it's not just a bunch of idiots. These
Germans
were very serious. And to me that is a great revelation. It shows you that inside the system, there must be soldiers and officers and so forth who absolutely can see what's going on, and they are absolutely abhorred by what they see. And
I agree with you. I agree with you that the police in Germany, I think there's a huge number of them who understand and know, and they're good people, and they would dearly love to be, you know, shifting their work so that they're actually doing the, you know, protecting the good people and their own people, and not be constantly protecting the criminals as they are right now. And I mean, I experienced it firsthand when in those transport trips between the court and the jail, and these drivers who were also prison guards at the men's prison. And I actually had the opportunity to have some discussions with them, some of them on a couple of these trips, and they were wide awake. And I mean, in their job, they were transporting the riffraff back and forth between the jail and the courthouse, and they could see what was going on and what kind of riffraff they were driving back and forth, and, you know, sort of the scum of the earth type of thing, and they weren't from Germany, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Anyway, they could see it very, very well, and they had huge respect for Alfred and myself. I know Alfred talks about how he was very, very well respected there in the prison by the staff as well as other prisoners. And I felt that during the time that I was there in the women's prison, that it, you know, the attitude towards me certainly did change from the beginning to the end of the time that I was there. And yeah, and so on and so forth. So, but I was earlier talking more about the justice system, like the judiciary and the judges and lawyers and whatnot. That's, I think, where you have more of the corruption and also more of the positions occupied by Jews.
Yes.
And, you know, the police forces are more the regular folks in those positions. And Henry Hoffmeyer, back to that, his letter went you know, a lot of his letters, they went to all the chiefs of police, and I don't know if he could send one to every single police. That would be, you know, so many, but in the hope that they, you know, most police officers would get a chance to read that, and it was also put online and made public and whatnot. So the idea was that if you reach those people at those levels, you know, that it's military people, police force people, that they do have some ability to make little decisions in every day and their jobs, that yes, if they have the right information about what's going on in the world, that will actually have an impact. They make little decisions every day that, you know, if they have a incorrect worldview, they make decisions one way. And if they have a correct worldview, like of the truth and what's going on, these little decisions they make constantly every day are going to be different, right? So
absolutely. Absolutely. And so for me, just to sort of wind up, I think that, yes, there are enough reasons that we are not losing, and there are many, many small glimmers of light appearing, yes, in all sorts of places. I think, Monica, our race is awakening, and I think that what's happening to us ultimately is going to be good. It's forced us to talk to each other, to learn about each other, things we would never have done before. It can only be healthy. So,
well, that's a good note to end on, Jan. It was just wonderful to talk to you again, and we'll do it again sometime, I'm sure, not too distant future, hopefully.
Yeah.
Let's have another chat, and I wish you all the best, and it must be very late at night for you now, too.
It is. Okay, right. Monica, it's been really an honor having you on here, and thank you very much. And we'll be chatting again.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.